You are about to hear another in the series, Voices from a Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. The Mighty Pen Project was founded by Richmond best-selling author David L. Robbins in partnership with the Virginia War Memorial to provide writing instructions to those who have experienced our nation's military events, either through their service or as a supporter of the military. Each of those involved in the Mighty Pen Project have a personal story to tell. The Mighty Pen Project teaches them how to tell it. Here in the studio are two participants in the Mighty Pen Project. First, I'd like you to meet Jess Lockhart, who retired as a lieutenant colonel. Colonel Lockhart, you are going to read your story about a man that you feel was dealt with unfairly by the Army. But first, tell us your story.
I was drafted on December the 7th, 1966, out of the University of Alabama. I'm not bitter. This was my fault. I was playing around, not studying. I was on scholastic probation. But the Army either changed me or gave me a chance to change. And 23 years later, I got out and retired as a lieutenant colonel, spending 4 years on active duty and 19 years in the Guard and Reserve. During that period of time, I was awarded Silver Star, Bronze Star with a V, Purple Heart, Air Medal, Combat Infantryman's Badge, 3 Army Commendation Medals, Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry, and the Vietnamese Civil Action Medal.
You started out as a non-com. How did you rise to the rank of lieutenant colonel?
I've told my kids that like they're in a closet and they're reaching for the light switch. And I found that light switch in the Army. I found a niche that I was really good at.
Tell us how you got involved with the Mighty Pen Project.
One Sunday afternoon, I was reading the Sunday paper, and I saw an ad that said that there was a writing program sponsored by the Virginia War Memorial. And I thought about it and thought about it. And over the years, I've been thinking about what kind of legacy can I leave my grandchildren. So I signed up for this course and was accepted. They only got 16 seats in the class. And it was taught by a professor at one of the universities here, either VCU or University of Richmond. I got in there, and it's all veterans. It's not a touchy-feely thing. It's not somewhere to go find yourself. They teach you how to write. And being with a bunch of veterans, if you write something down, you start telling a war story, somebody's going to call your hand on it and tell you it's BS. And that's the way we deal with each other. I've been to 3 classes, 2 of which was with David Robbins. And each professor that's mentoring your class shows you different styles of writing. David is a very polished, very good writer of stories, plays. He's constantly impressing me with his work ethic. I learned a lot.
You're listening to Voices from the Virginia Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And Jess Lockhart, read us your story.
The name of my story is Bender. Bill Bender was a member of my platoon in Vietnam in 68 and 69. The time was summer, 1969. The place, Alpha Company, 1st of 28th Infantry, Company Headquarters, La K, Vietnam. My platoon had just finished a scheduled 3-night, 2-day R&R period after a month of patrol missions. I told the platoon sergeant to form the platoon in front of the company headquarters. I stood in front of the platoon looking at a bunch of guys that could have been character actors in a hobo movie. They had ammo bandoliers, claymore mines, and socks filled with sea rations hanging all over themselves. As ragtagged as they looked, they were my men and my brothers. We had mostly arrived in country within a few weeks of each other and had learned our combat trade together. And we were pretty damn good. I yelled in my best 22-year-old command voice, "Report!" The platoon sergeant answered, 14 men present, 2 on R&R, 1 in the platoon tent. I went over to the platoon sergeant and asked in a low voice, "What do you mean, one in a platoon tent?" He replied, "Bender refuses to come to formation." I told him to take charge of the platoon, and I stumped off to the platoon tent. I opened the flaps of the partially lit tent and saw Bender sitting on the edge of his cot, staring at the walls. As I approached Bender, I told him, "Get your gear and get out in formation." Bender replied, "I ain't going." I sit down beside and ask him, "What?" He told me that he had had a dream the night before, and if he went on this mission, he was going to die. I tried to explain that we all had moments when we were scared, but we worked it out, and this was just a dream. Once again, he said, "I told you, I ain't going." "Do you know you could get court-martialed for missing a movement?" His reply, "I ain't going." I went to the company CP and told the first sergeant that Bender was in the platoon tent. I returned to the platoon to board trucks to load on helicopters to be inserted somewhere on an unnamed trail to start our 14-day mission. After we got settled in our ambush site, I asked my RTO what was Bender's problem. He told me that before I took over the platoon, they had almost gotten annihilated. Only 6 men survived, 2 of which were wounded. What had happened was a man on watch fell asleep, and the VC walked up on them and sprayed them as they slept, killing 10 men. Bender was one of the 2 men wounded. He got an AK round in his butt and was hospitalized for 3 months. Bender was the last survivor left in country, and he only had 2 months left to go in his 12-month tour. After 7 days, we were resupplied, and I got a note from the first sergeant that Bender was up on charges to be court-martialed. 2 months earlier, I had written Bender up for a Bronze Star with a V for pulling 2 wounded men back to the medic during a firefight. He was getting court-martialed, and he had a CIB, Combat Infantryman's Badge, Bronze Star for Valor, a Purple Heart, an Air Medal for 40 combat air assaults, plus the other Vietnam medals. This guy was not a character. He was just a 20-year-old kid that got scared. I found out Bender did get court-martialed, and he was sentenced to spend the remainder of his tour in LBJ, Long Bend Jail, and received a dishonorable discharge. The next time I saw Bender was at the platoon's reunion in 1995. During the reunion, I got him off to the side and asked him how things were going. He told me he had finished his tour in LBJ and came back to the States, where he was discharged. He returned to his old neighborhood in Newark, where he had gone to school and grew up. He was ostracized by his neighbors and deprived of a soldier's privilege of telling war stories and showing his medals that he had earned over a few beers. Plus, he couldn't get a decent job because of the dishonorable discharge. Bender finally found a lawyer and got the discharge upgraded. He continued on with his life, but with the shame hanging over him. In his mind, he felt he had let his brothers down and was a coward. That night of the reunion, back in the motel room, I told my wife that Bender had broken my heart because I felt I let him down. I should have done something that morning rather than walking away and leaving him to face a court-martial. I considered myself a good combat leader, but as a 22-year-old, the Army had not prepared me to cope with the psychological challenges of an infantry platoon leader. After Vietnam, I realized PTSD as the Army realized PTSD as a disorder rather than a disease, and trained leaders in identifying and helping soldiers with these symptoms, rather than just simply kicking the soldier aside and possibly ruining his life. Sunday afternoon after the reunion, as everyone was hugging each other and saying their goodbyes, Bender came up to me and thanked me for letting him come to the reunion. With a lump in my throat, I told him, "Bill, you were just a 20-year-old kid that got scared. You have nothing to be ashamed of. We were all scared. You just dealt with the problem differently. The Army handled the issue wrong. You were drafted and served your country. You didn't run to Canada or try to avoid the draft as a conscientious objector. You will always be part of this platoon." Bender attended a couple of reunions afterwards, and I always gave him a hug. I'm now almost 71 years old, and it's been 49 years since that morning in Lac Hay, and I sometimes ponder what I could have done differently to keep Bender from facing a court-martial. I knew most of the officers in the court-martial board, and I know I could have explained Bender's frame of mind. I wasn't there for him, and I have to live with that decision. I never judge a veteran's service, because we're all brothers and sisters with a common thread of compassion that runs through us. Bender passed away in the summer of 2017. One of my men sent me a copy of his obituary. The local VFW furnished an honor guard, and Bender finally got his recognition as a true warrior that he deserved.
You have just heard Jess Lockhart reading his story, Bender. You are hearing veterans who are taking part in the Mighty Pen Project. It's sponsored by the Virginia War Memorial and founded by Richmond best-selling author David L. Robbins. The purpose of the project is to provide writing instruction to those who have experienced our nation's military events, either through their service or as a supporter of the military. And these stories are being brought to you as a service of the Virginia Voice. For the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Also with us today is another participant in the Mighty Pen Project, Robert Waldroff. Mr. Waldroff, in a moment you're going to read your story, Guardian Angel. But so that we can understand the circumstances of your story, give us a bit of the background.
Sure. I was a 25-year-old Marine First Lieutenant attached as of artillery forward observer to a rifle company, India Company, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. Our mission was to provide security to villagers seeking to harvest a corn crop that had been planted by VC. The area was about 20 miles southwest of Da Nang in the Anwa Basin. It was called Operation Barren Green, and it commenced on July 14, 1970.
And with that preface, here is Robert Waldroff reading his story, Guardian Angel.
Guardian Angel, Robert H. Waldroff. Tom loved being with the Marine Grunts of India Company. He enjoyed their raw expressions of fatality, tough characters with big hearts. Word came for India to move to the bush on a company-sized operation. Destiny headed them to the Arizona Territory, a dangerous area of jungle, hedgerows, and endless small villages, always contested and full of bad guys. With no desire for medals or souvenirs, Tom knew all the fools were dead. This opportunity to get some war stories and talk shit in the officers' club with fraternity brothers was exhilarating. Initiation time. At 0430 hours began the ritual of organizing stuff, filling canteens, checking ammo, and eating as much hot chow as possible with sea rats on the menu for the next several days. Grunts trudged to the pad, bitching about the dangerous and nasty Arizona, and why the fuck did India Company get this mission? Moaning and groaning was a Marine tradition. Birds landed to fill up with men and equipment. India Company headed out with more than 100 riflemen, dressed in flak jackets and steel helmets, carrying all types of handheld weapons to inflict maximum death and destruction. With his .45 holstered and M16 in hand, Tom gritted his teeth and slowly nodded, like a rock. Lock and load, let's get some. Tom boarded the third chopper with the company commander and his staff. Last night, the CO briefed officers and NCOs that the mission required providing security for peasants of Mihap village as they harvested a huge and vital corn crop planted by VC and their NVA advisors to resupply rations stored in their mountain sanctuaries. Not wanting to share this bounty with the locals, its theft by the villagers, made possible by Marine protectors, offered the potential of a tremendous psychological victory. The skipper cautioned of enemy resistance, but not to worry due to the presence of our awesome firepower. Afterwards, the CO grabbed Tom. I know you've only been in country 5 weeks, and this mission will be OJT, but it's no sweat. We all start this way. Stay close, pay attention, you'll be fine. Tom fluttered over the Vujia River, watching it meander and knife through thick canopy. Huge bomb craters scarred the earth, memories of recent battles. Tom stared at the endless vistas of beautiful lush green, crisscrossed with open wounds of devastation. Fields filled with dead trees covered in the thick powder of Agent Orange's malignant death. The juxtaposition of natural beauty and man's ugly destruction recalled Greek tragedy. Tom landed, checked radios, pulled out maps and compasses, and got oriented. Soon all the Marines disembarked, formed up, and a long green line slowly moved to my hep. Tom and India Company followed a winding, narrow trail overrun with brush. Sniper holes from long-ago ambushes punctured the trail, slowing the march. The company labored to its destination, walking through a furnace of July heat and humidity. Harassing sniper fire, concealed by endless hedgerows and thick canopy, tracked them. At my hep, straw huts circled the compound, a poor man's subdivision. Several large huts for social and political events stood in the center. Peppers and other vegetables, fermented fish, and rice dried on racks of twigs and bamboo. A single well supplied water. Small people shuffled around purposely, chattering softly. Things seemed calm and routine. Outside the village sprawled the cornfield, bordered by large open spaces and long rows of 10-feet-high hedgerows. The menacing jungle enclosed this checkerboard. The Anbang Mountains, sanctuary to the VC and NVA, rose in the distance. Resting from the long, sweaty hump, Tom's helmet and flak jacket fell off. Four canteens emptied long ago, he eagerly accepted refills. Radios hissed and crackled as the captain positioned his platoons to form a 360 perimeter. All eyes followed the FNG. Trying to act like assault, Tom faked boredom, giving the grunts a grin. He noticed every Marine dug a fighting hole, so he sheepishly unstrapped his E-tool and began digging a deep hole. Dusk crept in and the LPs were set. Darkness fenced them in. Next day, the villagers fanned out into the cornfield to harvest bushel after bushel of the corn. Tom plotted the map, identifying locations of possible enemy infiltration and locked in coordinates. He talked of home and families with the CO, ate sea rats, fought the malaise, and tried to stay alert. Night returned, this time filled with sounds of movement reported by the LPs. The skipper didn't seem concerned. For sure the VC knew uninvited guests occupied their neighborhood. The third day, at 1000 hours, the battalion staff chopped in with resupply, got a sit rep from the CO, and filled their bird with fresh corn for the colonel's evening mess. The S3, fearing the VC marked the chopper's position, ordered the captain to set this position down and relocate across the cornfield. The staffers boarded and flew to safety in hot chow. Word came to break down camp and saddle up. Time to move out. With fighting holes filled and flank security called in, India casually formed up. Grunts milled around the large open area, separating me hep from thick hedgerows, checking packs for unnecessary weight, bartering sea rats, and bitching about humping in the noon heat to set up a new perimeter. Helmets and flak jackets laid on the ground. Hedgerows erupted in a cataphonic tear. Tom hit the ground, pawing protection from his just-covered fighting hole. A hurricane in sound and fury howled through the kill zone. A VC battalion moved into heavily fortified emplacements at the tree line behind the hedgerows to ignite an ambush, a cauldron of destruction. The next 20 minutes lasted 5 seconds. Under continuous gunfire, Marines lay unprotected in the kill zone. Maximum firepower was urgently needed to get on these killers. Fear and inaction were not options. Tom jumped up, zigzagging madly through the tempest. He flopped next to the two-man 81-millimeter observer team, 81s less powerful than the 105 howitzers, but light and nimble and able to get out rounds fast, were first up. Bullets pounded the ground. The two Marines froze with eyes wide as saucers. Tom grabbed their handset to shout target coordinates to the battery with no time to adjust. He had to execute with precision. There were no second chances. Tom then grabbed the handset from his own radio operator to call fire missions to the company's artillery battery. Smoke rose behind the hedgerows. The 81s came out fast and landed exactly on target. Get some. The CO formed a counterattack, leading Marines straight at the hedgerows with breathtaking bravery. Brothers started to fall, seeping blood. The hailstorm pelted their unprotected position. Sniper rounds struck around Tom and the FO team. Young village women got caught in a crossfire. Tom tried to drag them to safety, but the VC bullets cut them down. The 105s bullied their way into the brawl. Huge explosions tore open the VC emplacements, showering metal, tree limbs, and debris into the sky. Tom coordinating this onslaught of mortar and artillery rounds filling the sky, called mission after mission. The VC finally surrendered to the continuous artillery barrage, retreating to their mountain caves. The only gunshots were Marine rifles. Captain yelled, "Cease fire," and called for medevacs. Tom rushed into the field to comfort the wounded and help the corpsmen gather the warriors for extraction. Cleanup finished, battalion airlifted in a Husky, a tracked vehicle mounted with a 50-caliber machine gun to provide more firepower. Seemed everybody got the message. For sure the VC did. The captain signaled to move out and pointed to Tom. "Good job, Lieutenant. Proud of you." Confidence soared. He had stared into the eye of the gorilla and not blinked. Initiation successful. The sacred brotherhood offered acceptance. So it happens like this. Tom humped the cornfield and threw thick jungle into a cemetery filled with tall dirt mounds, elevated vaults to protect the dead from monsoons. In this sanctuary for the dead, the skipper decided to spend the night. The command center set up next to the Husky. Exhausted by today's action, a perimeter quickly formed. Deep holes were dug and sleep shifts were organized. Tom registered H&I targets on likely avenues of approach and slipped into his hole for rest. Around 0100 hours, an RPG hit the Husky, exploding into a rainstorm of shrapnel in the darkness. A hunk of ragged metal, motivated by decades of conflict and hate, blew open Tom's gut, releasing blood and intestine in a torrent of gore. Other chunks tore holes in his arms, legs, and sliced open his head and ear. Drifting into a long corridor of brilliant light, while feeling a wonderment of calm and peace, Tom's eyes suddenly opened. Screams, yells, and gunfire filled the night. Hell was in session. Seemingly from a long distance, the captain screamed, "Hold your fire! Hold your fire!" With order temporarily restored, the skipper asked, "Everyone all right?" Feeling a slimy wetness, Tom calmly said, "I think I'm hit." Gunny shined a light. "My God, Lieutenant! Corman up! Get me a medevac!" After several agonizing minutes, "Captain, Marble Mountain's ordered a stand down of all birds for the night." CO grabbed the handset and screamed, "I've got a lieutenant that needs a chopper right now, losing a lot of blood." "Sir." "Yes, sir." "Understood. Will do. Roger. Out." "Mission too dangerous and too far. Colonel says not till dawn. Doc, how long does he have?" "They're bad wounds and he's losing a lot of blood. Maybe 2 hours." "Fuck! Do what you can." Unimaginable hurt swept over the wounds. Tom struggled for comprehension through the unrelenting pain. "Doc! Morphine!" "Wounds in the abdomen and head. Can't do it." Helpless, self-reliance abandoned, groaning in pain and begging to be saved, screams rose from a hopeless soul pleading for life. "Captain, there's an Army warrant officer on our frequency. He says he's two clicks out. He heard our medevac call, saw the explosions and tracers. He wants to come down to extract." Most of us live on a continuum of expectations for physical and mental outcomes. Coincidence intervenes, but ultimately, things are reasoned and accounted for. Spiritual wonderments occasionally occur, but are explained in our context of experience and intellectual relativity. What causes an Army warrant officer at 0130 hours to fly solo in a Chinook into a Marine TAOR? Certainly Army didn't authorize a night joyride in Indian country. Why get involved? Common sense requires self-preservation. Marines in the shit in a hot zone? Surely this pilot had family and loved ones desperately needing him. No need for glory, just a cadre of straggling Marines to appreciate any act of courage. Get me the biggest piece of open land you can find and pop some flares to Mark. I'm coming down. Captain screamed, pop some flares. Mark the space between those two mounds. The vessel of mercy slowly drifted down into the madness. From the back of a perimeter, a firefight erupted, the VC firing at the unprotected hovering angel. An RPG sailed over the propellers, challenging, go home, seek protection. The angel refused and circled the death trap. Pop some flares closer to the perimeter and lay down some fire. I'll get in. Prepare him. Captain whispered, it's suicide. Most shots missed their target. The miracle continued, comprehended only through appreciating the source. A brave soul, not seeking glory, labored to save a fellow traveler, his courage and mercy changing Tom forever. What do you say to a man risking everything to save your life? Don't underestimate the grace of your fellow man. It will amaze and bring love to your heart. The Kong punctured through the perimeter, creating mayhem and chaos. The angel landed in the midst of a Kong Marine slugfest. Bullets ripped at the hull as the angel patiently waited while Marines placed Tom on a poncho to deliver him to his salvation. The vessel, with agonizing slowness, clawed its way through darkness seeking light. The Marines screamed, go, go, go! No one shot at this vulnerable and fragile silhouette. Finally, the ship and the two strangers reached calm waters and set sail to safe havens. This guardian angel had rescued Tom, revealing the veil of salvation. Suffering and abandonment of earthly things brought a transformation. He had been saved, and he surrendered to the promise of the cross. The need to talk shit in the officer's club vanished. Home, just born daughter, and a new life beckoned.
Robert Waldrop reading his story, Guardian Angel. And what makes your story so powerful, Mr. Waldrop, is that it happened to you. You were the person who was saved by that helicopter pilot. These are stories from participants in the Mighty Pen Project that takes veterans with a story to tell and teaches them how to tell that story. The Mighty Pen Project was founded by noted author David L. Robbins. In a previous program, I asked David why he began this program.
I read an article in the paper about a weekend writing program up in New York State for veterans, and I thought, a weekend? Come on, man, these cats deserve more than a weekend. So I went to the Virginia War Memorial, and I said, what do you think about a semester-length writing program for veterans? And it suits everybody's purposes because the Virginia War Memorial, wonderful partner, they get stories that help catalog and memorialize service amongst Virginians. And I get to continue my sort of lifelong attachment to bringing writing to other people. So everybody won on that one. So we started the Mighty Pen Project in March of 2014. I had no idea how moved the veterans would be to be surrounding each other around the table and to talk about their work and then to turn it into writing. I honestly, every time I teach the veterans, which I do every Wednesday night, I am renewed in my belief in this program. This has become, and I hope the listeners to this program will see this along the journey with me, they will see that there's two really powerful components to these men and women telling their stories. One is testifying their own stories, right? The other one is bearing witness.
Author and founder of the Mighty Pen Project, David L. Robbins, on why he started the Mighty Pen Project. Here on the Virginia Voice, from time to time, you will hear several installments of this program, Voices from the Mighty Pen Project. You will hear veterans with very powerful and very personal stories to tell. Some have a bit of humor. Most, because they are veterans, telling you about war, are gruesome first-person narratives. You are listening to Voices from the Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.